Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, we take a look at the business stories that are making this morning's papers and indeed online. Delighted to be joined in studio this morning by Gina London of Language of Leadership and a Sunday Independent columnist, as well as Doug Keating, who's the head of communications at Avalon. You're both very welcome to the programme. Good morning on this busy weekend. There's lots happening in town.
Morning, Bobby.
Doug, we might start with you. When we look at the Aer Lingus dispute, both sides were being told on the front page of the Irish Times today, both sides in Aer Lingus dispute are going to go to the Labour Court for talks on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, this Aer Lingus dispute, because it's one of those ones where we probably all have skin in the game as we look into the summer. I know I've got flights with Aer Lingus booked in July and August, and I think now it's a total of 400 flights cancelled, with 122 more cancelled next week. I think it is very much a dispute where there are two genuine sides who have legitimate claims. Often in trade union disputes, I probably lean towards thinking that people are going for you know, excessive requests. But there are two sides to this story. The trade union looking for something like 20% plus in terms of a pay rise. I think management have offered something close to 12%.
Yeah.
I mean, the backdrop here we have to remember is a genuine global shortage of supply of airline pilots. This is not a labour resource that you can easily go out and replace, not just because there's not enough around the world, but also it takes a long time to train pilots. And Aer Lingus pilots aren't alone in looking for significant pay rises. If we look across to the US, you've seen Delta giving a 34% increase over 4 years to its pilots last year. I think American Airlines over 40% over 4 years. So those are significant pay claims. I think it's good that they're getting into the labor court to try and thrash it out. I would imagine that somewhere between 12% and 24%, you know, it's going to land somewhere that both could live with it. Obviously, the pilots want to get better pay. The airline does not want to lock in long-term structural higher costs. You know, whatever it decides today will affect its P&L for several years to come.
Okay, Gina, I'm looking at the wider AIG story. There are implications for the company, are there not? And where Aer Lingus sits within that company. This business is trying to buy Air Europa. They own 20% of it. They're trying to buy 80% of it for 400 million. Any cost increase here is likely to have a massive increase to the global position of AIG. And I think this is why the airline owner of Aer Lingus is going to maybe knuckle down here.
Well, this is the situation, as Doug was saying, when you've got both sides and you're looking at it from now the airline's point of view, as you just indicated, the broader company wants to fully purchase Air Europa. And so, of course, they won't want to be appearing to be soft on labor as they're looking at the pilots over in Spain. Although, when you consider what the pilots are asking for, and as Doug mentioned, if there's a shortage of that labor supply, there's probably a good bit of leverage that the pilots are going to be utilizing as they go into the labor court on Monday. But if you look at just what the analysts are saying right now about the financial impact so far on Aer Lingus, that the strike and the dispute just since Wednesday could be slashing earnings for the airline by $170 million.
Yeah.
And this represents a 75% dip in operating profits, were about $225 million last year overall. But as you already mentioned, as Doug alluded to too, if the overall company is looking for a long-term profit, they are very likely to hold a little bit stronger, and we'll see what happens between 9% and 22% in the negotiations that come out. And of course, also indicated in the articles is some government pressure with the Taoiseach coming out and also encouraging everybody to stay in the room until you come out with agreement, because the impact from an economic standpoint is one for the airlines and also then for the businesses that are hoping to have the tourists that are going to be coming in on Aer Lingus. But also, as Doug and myself too, with bookings in August, one of the tens so far of thousands of passengers that are being impacted. You've got 120 flights that they're already canceling coming up this week, and they've already canceled 40,000 passengers' flights for last week, and that indicates about 20,000 flights passengers, flight passengers coming up this week. And so it is having a ripple effect already just since the pilots started striking last Wednesday.
Now, Doug, I thought you'd be in work this weekend so that you could hear the music from your office in Balls Bridge because Taylor's in town and she's going gangbusters. It really is a remarkable event, and the whole euphoria around Taylor Swift, I have to say it's been eye-opening to me to watch. I'm somebody who's invested in this, even though I'm not going to the concert, if that makes any sense to you.
Well, Bobby, I don't know.
I paid for the tickets.
I see. Yes, yes. Well, I don't know if you or I are the target demographic, and I confess I'm not going to Taylor Swift. I think the energy, excitement, enthusiasm that it's generating is great to see. She obviously went out last night and gave a banger of a show. You know, she comes on at 7:15. She plays, I think, for 3 hours, something like 48 songs. So she's definitely giving, well, I don't know whether it's value for money because I'm sure those tickets cost a lot, but fair play to her. I mean, two observations that I thought were amazing, that as I understand it, the Three Arena has just been turned into a dedicated merchandising warehouse by the Taylor Swift machine. And it's kind of amazing to think that, I think it was back in 2011, that was where she played the gig. She now just uses it to sell the merch. Also, and this is maybe the cynic in me, I laugh when I read in concerts that she tells the crowd, you know, nobody does it like you. You're amazing, Dublin. And I'd like to get quotes from every venue around the world just to check that they don't tell that to every audience.
Of course they do. Every audience is the best audience. And I was on Friday, I flew back from a work trip in Vienna and I was flying into Dublin, of course, not on Aer Lingus. And there was a group of people coming from California. Yeah. Actually, then via the layover that we had in Paris, and they were all coming for the Swift concert because they couldn't afford tickets in California, but they could afford them here. But the Swift economics, or the Swiftonomics, Bobby, as they call it, this is the Eras Tour, is her highest grossing tour, which began back last March, last year in Arizona. And it is amazing when you think about the numbers, as Doug was saying, the lowest grade tickets here for the Aviva were 126 euros. The resale ticket values for these are reported about 724 up to over 2,000 for a ticket. Well, she gets about 13 million for each concert for each of those fabulous audiences, Doug. So she also just last year made 130 million in Spotify royalties. So if we wonder why she's a billionaire, wonder no further. And well, 2 weeks ago, I was actually in the U.S. and just in regular shopping mall stores. I have a 16-year-old daughter, so of course shopping malls in the U.S. is a must-do when you're back. There are dedicated Taylor Swift sections. They're not even touting a concert. They just have Taylor merch everywhere. It's phenomenal.
I think it's great. I came back in from the U.S. earlier this week as well. I was on a plane from Atlanta, and half the plane, I would suggest, were going to the Taylor Swift concert. And the tickets in the US arm are up like $1,200 and stuff. So people can actually fly here, pay our prices for the tickets,
I heard,
stay for 2 or 3 days and be quids in.
Three Americans on the dart who said in California it would have cost them $3,000 each all in to go to Taylor and hotels and stuff. They'd managed to do the trip to Ireland for the three of them for $4,000. So they felt they were $5,000 to the good.
Yeah. I mean, but these guys, then they were guys, by the way, on my flight. They were all coming first for the Pride Parade today and then going to Taylor tonight.
Great.
Good doubleheader.
Now, Gina, as somebody from farmland, Indiana, and who has an interest in American politics, I wanted to bring you to the analysis on the Biden-Trump debate. We have three stories to look at. But it really does seem that Biden really didn't perform. He was vulnerable. And there are now all sorts of questions being asked about his tenure and whether he can go the distance. What's your own talk or your own thoughts around this as somebody who understands American politics?
Yes. Well, first of all, I did cover the White House and I covered conventions and presidential politics for years when I was with CNN in Washington. And so, of course, I actually did watch this, even though I was in my hotel room as my connecting flight was delayed in Paris, but I did watch that. It was painful. Yeah. But I mean, it is not overstating to say that the first debate was a disaster for Biden. And there have been now, not just in the three articles that we're talking about today, but all over globally, there are the New York Times has an editorial that's asking for, that's urging the president to step down to be replaced. I don't think it's going to happen. On Friday, he was in North Carolina, and he looked re-energized as he was giving his own rally. And there is a lot of time between now and the actual presidential election in November. We've got four plus months, and we have an opportunity, I think, as a country, because it's just a difficult situation to try to replace him logistically and primary and electoral votes and dedicated votes and things like that for the convention. But here's the thing. The U.S. and the world in general has a attention span deficit. And we are now talking about a debate that happened on Thursday. Here we are on Saturday. There's a lot more rallies that can happen. I don't think that there's going to be a push to replace Biden, even though that would probably be a good idea in many ways. But what I'm looking toward is the RNC convention, July 15th, the DNC convention on August 19th, and then really importantly, take a look at what happens on September 10th, which is the next debate that is scheduled between Trump and Biden. But no question, Biden did very, very poorly. It wasn't like watching your grandfather. It was like watching your great-grandfather.
I actually stayed up and watched it as well, and something I don't often do, but I did, and I kind of regretted it because I just thought it was a slow-motion car crash, I thought. And, you know, reading some of the narratives here today, 80% of Americans don't want either of these candidates, which really, really makes it, you know, a very, very difficult situation.
It does. I mean, something's gone strangely wrong with American politics when we get served up, an 81-year-old man who's clearly struggling versus a 78-year-old lunatic. I mean, I haven't seen the full debate. I've just seen the snippets. I would take Biden in any shape or form, no matter how stuttery or doddery, over Trump. But, I mean, Gina is more experienced with this, so I find it very interesting that she doesn't think Biden will be removed. But just reading through some of these articles, I mean, you know, the Irish Times, Irish Times editorials are, in my experience, not known for being very definitive, but, you know, they don't mince their words. Biden singly failed to meet the low bar which had been set for him to disprove the widespread perception that he is too old to serve. Very clear. The other article you gave to us, Bobby, is in the Irish Independent, a columnist from the Daily Telegraph called Rosina Saber. I mean, she makes the point that is perhaps one to think about, that at least, you know, this debate has happened early. There could be time to change and ramp up a new candidate. We do have short attention spans, and it's probably appropriate just briefly to name check the three people who are being spoken about as the potential people who replace Biden. Obviously, Vice President Kamala Harris, California Governor Gavin Newsom, and Gretchen Whitmer, who's governor of Michigan, who I'm not familiar with. But one thing this article does note, Kamala Harris, 59, Newsom, 56, Whitmer, just 52. So in one fell swoop with any of those candidates, the whole age and frailty thing gets flipped and they would be able to maybe take on Trump at his own game.
Yeah. No doubt, but I don't disagree with any of that. And any of the three of them could wipe the floor with Donald Trump when it comes to debating. And Gavin Newsom would have crushed him when it comes to being able to keep Donald Trump off of his lies and onto the facts, which interestingly, the CNN team didn't do real-time fact-checking during that debate for a variety of reasons. But at any rate, the situation, though, in reality is the Democrats didn't have courage back in April of last year when President Biden came back from what was an incredibly successful trip in Ireland. And before he'd officially announced, he could have taken a wonderful, elegant exit strategy opportunity and said, I'm handing it over to a new generation. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who was on the campaign over, manages all their West Coast states. And he says, Gina, Valerie, which is his sister, and Dr. Jill won a second term.
Okay. Well, we'll watch this space because I think there's a lot more to run on that. Nike, Doug, the shares taking a bit of a hammering. It looks like brands like OnCloud and Hoka seem to be stealing a bit of their thunder. They still maintain a pretty significant market share of 35-odd or 34-odd percent, but the share price has taken a real hammering.
An absolute hammering, Bobby. After announcing on Thursday evening that rather than making a slight increase in revenue this year, they would be have low single-digit declines, the market responded very negatively. Shares fell 18% on Friday, wiping over $20 billion off Nike's market value. And as you say, whilst Nike has these huge names like LeBron James and Cristiano Ronaldo as its sort of a celebrity endorsements, these newer brands, which I wasn't familiar with, but you know, had a little look up when we were prepping on, which, as I understand, you know, Roger Federer back,
yeah,
has been hugely successful. Hoka seems to be slightly more kind of comfortable, fashionable rather than sporty. I gather the likes of Reese Witherspoon and Gisele Bündchen, the model, wear them, so they seem to be attracting sales. And the Nike CEO is under some pressure to cut costs, turn the business around, but it's not often that blue chips like a Nike would drop a massive 18% in one day.
Yeah,
that's a real message that things are bad.
Absolutely. Gina, just back to the States again. Arda, a company of Irish origin, to halt glass making at two US factories. Interesting, some fallout for the industry focus to move to cans rather than bottles, and also the Bud Light contract, which was the subject of a ban or effectively a boycott, which has affected sales, but is resulting in two factories closing.
Yeah, you're right. You've got the Irish-owned company announcing now that there are going to be job cuts in Texas and in Washington State. In Washington State, there's temporary layoffs for about 225 employees because they're going to be making a halt on production for a period. And over in Texas, so they're actually closing the manufacturing plant altogether. And that's a 500 job loss that's happening right there. And as you mentioned, the declining revenue is in for other reasons, but a lot because that they're expensive to produce bottles when you compare it to aluminum or aluminium, for those of you who are listening.
Well, there you go.
Out there.
There's somebody who's been living in Ireland a long time.
I can do it. I know, but I can talk about the cans. But yeah, it's a disappointment for a company that's been expanding and was looking to build up revenue and now have to announce those cutbacks, as they've been doing really onward since April earlier this year.
Doug, I was looking at a very interesting business featured in today's Irish Independent as part of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby, but it's a saddling business that's been operating down there in Kilcullen since 1880, a company called Bernie Saddlers. Wonderful, wonderful business.
It is. It's a lovely story.
Just thought it'd be nice to feature it.
It is, yeah. And we're obviously the Irish Derby happening on Sunday, and perhaps some of the jockeys and horses will be saddled up in one of these beautiful handcrafted leather saddles that Bernie Saddlery has been churning out since 1880. It's a fifth generation family business. Thomas Burney is the man pictured in the story. And what I particularly like about it is that they, as they say, that they are continuing the kind of craft. They run apprenticeships to teach young people.
This,
yeah, you know, it takes a serious amount of time, but they run this successful business, employs 10 people, and as I understand it, is saddles are bought by the great and the good of the Irish horse racing world. So long may it continue.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a beautiful story. And again, when you think that this is the last family-run saddlery in all of Ireland, it's worth spotlighting and it's worth sharing, because these types of craftsmanship arts are a dying breed and it's important to demonstrate them. Quick tip for the website, though, put a list of who rides on your saddles, because that would be really cool to have us know.
That's what we are. Gina and I were trying to look
we
up
to
see the, you know,
who's at the
does
current?
Ryan Moore use a Bernie saddle?
Know.
I don't
sort
know.
Of saddle influencers. There
right.
you go.
This
who
could
are
be a
they?
Thing. This
who
could
are
be a
they?
Thing.
So, Doug, I don't know if you're a Lewis passenger or you use the Lewis, but I just, again, noted in today's Irish Times that the passenger numbers set to hit 50 million as Lewis celebrates 20 years. Just looking back on the history of the Lewis, I remember its construction, because I remember for 4 years, basically there was Kango hammers right across when I was trying to run a business around it. So that's my early memory of it, but it's been a wonderful success.
Yeah, I mean, it seems bizarre now that 20, you know, back then there were debates around whether this was a good idea, given obviously it went from, I think, 22 million passengers in its first year, exceeding forecasts, to 50 million this year. I mean, I do think, I mean, you talk about the digging up roads and stuff. I mean, one of the farces of the Lewis was, of course, that initially they built it only to stop at St. Stephen's Green. And then, you know, we realised actually it probably needed to connect. And so then we had to spend another 3-4 years, as I recall, digging up most of inner city Dublin. So, I mean, the one thing that Lewis makes me think is that when we do embark on public transport projects, and I know that they're hugely expensive and you can make an economic model tell you any answer you want that it's a waste of time or it's the best thing since sliced bread. But I suspect that whenever you're doing those investments, push the envelope and maybe go bigger than you expected. Because if history tells us anything, is they are typically more used than you think they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And when you think about this article talking about the success, and in the Times, the article does give a good timeline of the construction, as you mentioned, the passenger ship and the safety record, but also this success then hopefully, please God, spur on the incentive and the investment in making some public transport from the airport to anywhere.
Well, I see there's an application in today for a new extension for a new Lewis line going out to Finglas. So that
will it be in our lifetime, Bobby? So, that is the hopefully. Question. Will it be in our lifetime?
And very finally, Doug, non-doms, not condoms. Just to finish out on.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit.
My children aren't listening.
We let Gina off the hook on this one.
Yeah, so this is a funny story that's picked up in Colin Coyle's column on the business page of the Irish Times, where he quotes a story from The Guardian where a Labour MP, Carl Turner, was out canvassing and was getting castigated by a potential voter saying, "I'm not going to vote for you. It's a disgrace because you're putting a tax on condoms." To which the bemused Mr. Turner was like, "What? No, I think you got it wrong. We're actually going to put a tax on non-doms, i.e. non-domiciled individuals who tend to be very, very rich. And I think Rishi Sunak's wife with her £900 million of wealth is one of them. So it's not condoms, it's non-doms, folks."
There you go. Well, Gina London, Doug Keating, thanks very much for an entertaining review of the business stories, and enjoy what is a very busy weekend here in Dublin.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.